Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpuga. This evening we'll discuss Kenya and the rule of law. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macori. Vincent is the host of Africa 54, and we have him here in the studio. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Thank you very much.
You're very much welcome. And we'll be joined momentarily by Samuel Atandi. He's a Kenyan member of parliament and also a member of the NASA coalition. He'll be joining us, I hope, from Kisumu. And as I said, tonight our topic is going to be Kenya and the rule of law. Vincent, why don't we start here? Events in Kenya, especially these last few days, have the news has been dominated by the degrading, inhuman treatment of a Kenyan citizen who has been now twice deported.
Exactly. I mean, that has been high drama that for some does not make sense. This is because Mr. Miguna was allowed to come into the country by the courts of Kenya in the interpretation of his holding of dual nationalities of Kenya and Canada. The government was found to have violated his right to be in Kenya legally and demanded that actually they should facilitate his return. He came back to the country, arrived at the airport, but confusing turn of events, he was not allowed in. And one of the arguments of the government was that he did not accept to present his Canadian passport on which he was traveling. But Mr. Miguna said he will not present it because he has Kenyan documents which had been confiscated by the government that needed to have been returned to him, meaning here the passport, because he still held the Kenyan national ID. And the government did not return his Kenyan passport so that he could use it to enter the country. And as a consequence, then there ensued a standoff between Mr. Miguna and the government, insisting that he wouldn't be allowed in. After several hours of being stuck at the airport, then, of course, we saw what happened. The attempt to have him put on a plane out of the country, which Mr. Miguna fought successfully within those first hours of his arrival, maybe 24 hours later, and eventually he continued staying at the airport. But as we speak today, Mr. Miguna is out of the country, is at the airport in Dubai, having, as you said, been wrestled down by a bunch of security officers, sedated, and then put on a plane, the Emirates, to Dubai airport, and where he is at the moment.
Well, Vincent, to many people listening, to many other people who know the country well, this is the first. He's a Kenyan citizen, born and bred and grew up in Kenya.
This is the first because Kenya does recognize dual citizenship. But even the most confusing thing is that Mr. Miguna was in Kenya last year. In fact, he did not only stay in Kenya for so many months, but he participated in the political process. While in Kenya, he had a Kenyan passport, Kenya national ID, the PIN number for paying his taxes. But even more importantly, Mr. Miguna was registered as a candidate for governorship of the city of the county of Nairobi.
That's right.
There is no way he would have been registered and allowed to run as a governor of the county of Nairobi, a very important one, without having had Kenyan citizenship. So it did not make sense to anybody that when it was convenient, he could be declared a non-Kenyan and be requested, or rather be forced out of the country back to Canada.
And the other thing is the brutality and the treatment. Even let alone whether he was a citizen or not, any human being to be treated such a manner, manhandled, locked up in a toilet for two nights, and now as we are hearing clips from him in Dubai, that he had been beaten, he had been injected with some stuff, and he didn't realize that he was alive until he arrived in Dubai.
Yes. So it is, that's why it's kind of mind-boggling, because the actions of the government here don't make sense. To make this kind of a drama out of Mr. Miguna Miguna, to act in such a way that, in a way, humiliates not only the person but embarrasses the country, doesn't, in many ways, make sense, because you wonder what it is meant to achieve. But, of course, what is the most important thing and the most critical thing is not even about Miguna Miguna, but it's the government's, we're talking about the executive's stance right now of defying court orders, which of course raises the question of, is Kenya going to continue being a country that is governed by its own laws? Mm-hmm. That is actually the critical question at the point where we stand right now.
Talking of the courts, and that's why I termed this discussion Kenya and the rule of law. The court, before even he got back, the court, before even the first deportation, he was supposed to be deported, then the court ruled they should come and enter. The authorities ignored that. Yesterday, the court ruled he should be released and appear in court on Wednesday. They ignored that. The court held some officials in contempt of court. They didn't even show up in court. So where does this leave Kenya as far as the rule of law is concerned?
For me, it takes me back to the reaction of President Uhuru Kenyatta soon after the August 2017 elections were nullified. He, at that time, was livid with that decision, because of that decision by the Supreme Court, to the extent that he actually publicly called the Chief Justice a thug, and he said he will fix the judiciary once they win the election and come back to government. He said, we will fix these thugs. And if you look at it from that perspective, it will look look like this is the process. This is the fixing that the president promised to do. Mm. What is happening here today is a contest between the executive and the judiciary. Of course, according to the Constitution of Kenya, the judiciary and the executive are, you know, one of the two of the three arms of government.
Yes.
They're equal, but the executive obviously has decided in a very determined way to kind of diminish the authority of the judiciary by progressively undermining it. What it's happening here is not only to defy it, but to send a message to all that from now henceforth, you cannot place your hopes in the court system, because we really don't care about the court system. We don't respect the judiciary. And it's a kind of a putting it right on everybody's face that we can do whatever we want, and there's nothing the judiciary is going to do, because we are the ones that hold all the instruments of government. That's what I think the message can be, that we can say can be read from the actions of the government.
But then you see, I don't know what the Kenyan government thinks, because if you disable the judiciary, it works both ways, because there are instances where the government will need to go through the courts of law to at least give a stamp of legality on their actions. Then how will that one work?
I'm thinking here there's somebody who is getting completely overzealous in crushing the opposition against the government, that they have forgotten that, in fact, the same laws, the court system are there to protect not only the individuals, but in fact, for the sake of the government itself, as you're saying, to legitimize it. But also there is a sense in which some people are forgetting that the same laws would protect them when some years to come they will be out of power. I think being drunk with power can make you for some for a moment, be blinded by the reality that it's a matter of time, and then there will be someone else in power. Now, if you undermine the judicial system, if you actually weaken the safeguards that have been entrenched in the Constitution, safeguards that protect the freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of movement, someday when you're out of power, it could work out against you.
That's right.
And the most intriguing thing is that actually the current president and the deputy president were behind agitation for this new constitution. They played a big role in ensuring that this particular constitution way back in 2010 passes and becomes the law of the land. Now, to see them violating the same constitution, undermining the same institutions that they worked so hard to put in place, is completely mind-boggling.
And listen, to the credit of the judiciary in Kenya, they have been forthright in doing their work. You remember the nullified election? They have done. They have not shied away from doing their work. Only that they are not being helped by the executive.
Exactly. They have done their work without fear or favor. And it is understood that, of course, if the courts adjudicate a case and they rule in a way that doesn't favor you, you can be unhappy.
Yes.
You can even feel that perhaps it's not fair.
But
then to, in fact, decide that because we don't like the way you interpreted the law and the ruling you made, we're going to crush you, because that was the threat. And now to very, very openly defy the courts and get into a path of undermining the authority of the court system, it's a very sad day for Kenya.
I see. Well, for those who are just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA Studios in Washington. Tonight, we're talking about the rule of law in Kenya, and I'm here with my colleague, Vincent Macori, host of VOA's Africa 54, and we're supposed to be joined by Samuel Atandi, a Kenyan member of parliament, but it appears we have some technical issues, and we're trying to get him online, but the line is not going through. But I shall keep trying. If we can get him before the end of the show, that would be great. Meanwhile, I'm Douglas Impuga in Studio One. And Vincent, first of all, we have a verified report that the government in the United Arab Emirates is threatening to re-deport Mr. Miguna Miguna back to Kenya. Now, if they do that, what would be his fate? Because now, if they can't let him in, and they can't, I don't know. In any case, I don't even know why they want to deport him to Dubai, of all places.
I think all that Kenya wanted to do is to get him out of the Kenyan space, and then he will figure out. They tried to force him, I think, to a plane. The idea was to get him to Dubai and then get him on a plane, perhaps.
To London,
And then after that, he'll be on his own. They failed to do that, or they haven't done that yet successfully. But if they bring him back to Kenya, he again will not be able to get into the country. I'm seeing a situation where Mr. Miguna Miguna may spend several weeks and months, perhaps, at the airport, unless he's willing to just go back to Canada. Because if at this point, despite a court ruling, that Mr. Miguna Miguna should not only be allowed into the country, in fact, yesterday the court had ruled that they wanted him to be produced in court, to be brought to court.
Yes.
And the government defied that. They did not produce him in court. The judge went ahead and said, I want the Minister of Interior, Mr. Matiang'i, Fred Matiang'i, the Chief of Police and the Chief of the Immigration to appear in person in court at 2 p.m. They did not appear there. They did not go there today. So, after all this defiance, what is the worst that can happen? What else that could change on the government side? I can see Mr. Miguna probably spending some time at the airport, and probably they will try to just wear him out. What can he do? He can talk, make noise, scream, and after some days, then what?
The trouble is, if he agrees to go to Canada as they want him to, that would be a terrible precedent, because if you're in the opposition and you make noise, they just put on the plane and throw you out of the country.
Yes. And if they allow him to come in now, the question will be then, why did you in the first place
refuse to allow him in?
I mean, they've made such a mess of all this issue that you cannot see any logical ending to this fiasco, because it does not make sense. And the more, in fact, the standoff continued, the more any resolution looks a little unclear.
Mm.
Because what will it look like to the government if they allow him in?
Mm. Because they've already put themselves in, tied themselves in this circus.
Yes.
Because,
yes,
first of all, they didn't have a reason to deport him.
Exactly.
And then they deny him entry now, humiliate him, then deport him again. Now, if they allow him in eventually...
Again, it will look so bad on the side of the government, because the question will be raised, why did you have to go through all this? In fact, I even have a journalist beaten up, assaulted for trying to cover the event.
Mm.
And then eventually just open the door and say, come in.
Now, Vincent, just a week or so ago, we had the famous handshake between Mr. Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga, the two principals, the two contestants in the previous election. And they referred to each other in very friendly terms, referring to each other as His Excellency. And the aim was to bring their supporters together, bring the country together and move on. Now, with this happening, how do you see it impacting that relationship?
First, we really don't know the extent of this relationship.
Mm.
Mr. Raila Odinga has always been considered a master strategist.
Mm.
But nobody really knows what kind of strategy is here, because this handshake was born of some private conversations, kind of some deal, wheeling and dealing between just the two gentlemen and some very close friends of theirs. So nobody really knows. Nobody has the details of what this handshake means.
Mm.
And since then, we haven't seen any movement.
Mm.
So is Miguna Miguna a factor in the future of this handshake?
Mm.
Does Mr. Raila Odinga necessarily peg his relationship with Mr. Kenyatta on how the government treats Mr. Miguna Miguna?
Mm.
That's questionable. Because, again, you have to realize that Mr. Miguna Miguna has not necessarily been a great friend of Raila Odinga all the time.
Mm.
He has also done some damaging stuff.
Mm.
And right now, he has done some damaging stuff on Mr. Raila himself. He has called him names that you can't even mention here on Voice of America Radio.
Mm.
And even recently, he just called him stupid. And he said he's coming back to lead a liberation movement so that he can liberate Kenyans from Mr. Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga.
Mm-hmm.
So would Mr. Odinga be working with a person who wants to depose him from the leadership of his opposition coalition or even his opposition party?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. So these are things we can speculate about. All I know that I can say is that nobody knows really what is the hand in that handshake.
Mm.
And we will have to just wait and see. Because weeks have passed. We really haven't seen progress. We haven't seen any open meetings between Raila Odinga and Mr. Kenyatta. We haven't seen any consultations between the opposition and the government side in relation to this handshake.
I may be except apart from the easing on the boycott.
That's it. So the only thing, the only movement we've seen is from Raila's side.
Mm.
There has been a little movement by saying, in a way, he has recognized Uhuru Kenyatta.
Mm.
In a way, he is legitimizing his presidency.
Yes, that's right.
He announced that they're going to have a tour of Raila's stronghold, that, in fact, the president is going to be taken on a tour by Raila Odinga there. In other words, he's saying he wants to take him back to his people and say, forget about what happened last year, the bad blood between me and him, or the unfairness with which you were treated after refusing to participate in this election.
Mm.
Question is, will the people embrace Mr. Kenyatta? And if they do, then what does it mean? Is Mr. Raila about to join the government? The Jubilee government, then if that is the case, what is the future of the opposition in Kenya?
Yeah, and the other issue is that Kenya thrives, among other things, Kenya's economy thrives on tourism, partly. Now, with these international headlines on the way Mr. Mgwinagwina was treated, does the government feel that could have an impact on the tourism industry?
Yeah, but remember, the Kenyan economy has really been struggling since last year. Mgwina Mgwina's drama at the airport wouldn't necessarily have more serious effects on Kenya's tourism than it had, because, look, this is just about how the government appears. But last year, there were real concerns of violence in the country during and after the elections. We actually saw major clashes between the police and civilians. So those were the moments where you could say there was concern about tourism, but even other business. I was in Kenya and I was staying at a hotel where we were like five people in a major five-star hotel because people had left and others weren't coming in. Mgwina Mgwina's drama at the airport is just... It's an image. It's a sideshow. But it may have an image, but it's not something to make somebody be scared of going to Kenya because they saw Mr. Mgwina Mgwina being treated so violently at the airport. I don't think that affects. But there are more serious issues than that.
Yeah. But then in that case, maybe Mr. Mgwina should seek exile elsewhere? Should go away because I'm not sure they would allow him in.
No, Mr. Mgwina has he has a place he can go back to and stay and strategize on how to come back. He has Canada, his other country of not only residence, but his home country, nationality. But he can always come back. So it all depends on what he needs to do. Remember, the Kenyan government is not saying that they're denying him, and I'm not making a case for them. He could probably, hopefully, they want him to do that, almost like to literally reapply for the Kenyan citizenship.
Yes.
And therefore, the question is, if he dared them and actually filled out the Kenyan forms and said, I want my passport, will they deny him?
They could.
And then now that will create another situation. On what basis? On what grounds will you deny a Kenyan who was born in Kenya citizenship? Because you cannot use the dual citizenship as a case because the Constitution recognizes dual citizenship.
The irony is, once you apply, that means you never had it in the first place. So
that's the question. But he had it. Yes. He had the passport. He has never lost his citizenship. In fact, the government, it has been proved by the court. So the end game is unpredictable because we really don't know what's the agenda of the government. And so the next move for Mr. Mgwina is something that we cannot predict.
Mm-hmm.
Really, we cannot predict.
And now you see the... what are this one now? Because now there seems to be, people thought after the handshake that maybe the government, the powers that be, would try to bring the people together. They said, and you can't do that when you have such a acts of.
Unless of course somebody's trying to say Mgwina Mgwina is not important in all this deal. We don't know if that is the message they're trying to send. But then at this point as we speak, we haven't really seen movement as regards the handshake. Nothing serious. So will it be a factor? Some people have speculated that Raila Odinga could use this as one of the, an issue of negotiation here, that there was a promise to allow Mr. Mgwina Mgwina back in, to stop harassing all opposition supporters, including people like Maina Wanjigi, David Ndi, and others who had initially even been denied their passports so they couldn't fly out of the country. So we are waiting to see what kind of goodwill will the government send out there. What will the government do in the coming weeks and months to indicate that the handshake, in fact, has some significance in unifying the people of Kenya? Or is it just a deal between two gentlemen? We are yet to know.
The other puzzling thing is Mr. Mgwina Mgwina, his troubles began with the swearing-in of Raila as the people's president. Now, Raila was not hindered from swearing-in. He has not had any trouble moving around. And the other hierarchy of the opposition have not been bothered. What is it personal with Mr. Mgwina Mgwina or what?
It's what, what confuses people, because why him?
Why him, yes.
Why was Mr. Raila not touched?
Because if there was an offense committed, it was Raila who committed the offense.
Yeah. So, and the oath In fact, they say the oath that was administered is not similar to that of the president.
Yes.
So technically, whatever he did legally did not break the law. It can be seen as just kind of some kind of drama, some political drama.
Mm.
But legally, it cannot be found to be a treasonable charge because they did not actually administer the oath of office that is administered under the Constitution to the president of the country.
Mm.
They kind of revised it to make it kind of a bit different.
Mm.
So if you put him in a court of law, you can't convict him. So why make a big stink out of that? Why seek to deport the guy? I speculate that perhaps they are concerned that because of his kind of character, his demeanor, his disposition, and the declaration that he wants to lead the so-called national resistance movement, it kind of sounds militant to the government, and they feel like he is perhaps the most likely person to lead this kind of a movement, which could end up being violent, which could end up being used, you never know, to destabilize the country, even including, I don't know, the possibility of encouraging people to take up arms. They may be fearing.
Yeah, but going by what's happening on social media and talking to some people, there are people who sympathize with him, empathize with him, and actually believe like he does that those who are ruling now didn't get there in the legal way, that they, as he keeps saying, they stole the election. So those people won't be assuaged by anything else apart from letting the man feel free and not be punished.
Exactly. So the question, I think they are playing around with they want to see whether, does he really have such a following in the country? Does he have enough people behind him who could maybe put so much pressure on the country to make the country feel embarrassed enough and allow him in? I think it's possible that they could run him out of steam or perhaps we could get a surprise resolution to this, because it has also happened that sometimes after, just as it was with the handshake, the surprise handshake, you could be surprised that in a few days, Mr. Miguna Miguna could be just allowed into the country.
Who knows? Being Kenyan politics, it could be in government tomorrow.
tomorrow it could be allowed in, and they would say it was a little confusion, and forget about that. Let's move on with the future. That's Kenya.
So generally, in the last few seconds left, how do you see Kenya pulling itself out of this? Because things have not been normal since the elections.
Things haven't been normal. I think what we can say today, the biggest concern is the undermining of the judiciary. Mm. All Kenyans of all walks, ethnicities, levels of education should be concerned about that. And I think this is what should be the conversation right now. Very urgently, how do we restore rule of law, respect the judiciary, and have institutions that protect the rights of everybody, including journalists?
Yeah.
Our colleagues are being harassed, are being assaulted, and they needed to have the court system to seek recourse. Right now, that is being threatened. I think for me, if you take away all the drama, the concern of everybody should be the sanctity of the Constitution and the respect of the judiciary.
I hope they better raise up to it, because Kenya has been the shining star in the region, but now other things don't augur well.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time, and that's all for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks a lot, Vincent, for being on the show.
It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Kwame Opori, and our engineer was Lina Ramkas. We'll be back again next week for another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com, click on Programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga.
Stay tuned for African News.